Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
The Athletic.
That's goal! Brilliant! Brave and brilliant!
MM stands for Mick McCarthy, not Merlin Magician.
Evans will hit it! Oh! That is special! It's magic at Molineux!
Dreaming is for free.
Hello and welcome to the Molineux View podcast with me, Jackie Oatley, and a man keeping Wolves fans informed throughout this incredibly long hiatus without a game, Tim Spears. Hello, Tim.
Hello, Bab.
On today's Molineux View, which Wolves players have done what and where during the international break? Connor Cody's only captain England again, although his leadership has unfortunately inspired Wolves' next opponents, West Ham. We'll explain how and we'll preview that game. We'll discuss how much attention fans should pay to transfer rumours during the rounds and how much attention the club pays to fans' opinions on social media. To read Tim's in-depth articles and analysis, you must be a subscriber to The Athletic, and you can sign up for less than £1 a week for the first 6 months by going to theathletic.co.uk/wolvespod. Hello, spiders. How's semi-lockdown international break life treating you?
Fine. Fine. Just wait for the beer gons to open in a couple of weeks. How clean is this podcast going to be, I ask you? Because last week, you know, I consider this a family show led by you. You know, you're extremely, you know, clean cut. All your work from the BBC over the years and everything, you know, really, it's given you those levels and the standards that you like to keep. However, last week, lovely Richard Skiro, one of the nicest people you'll ever meet on the podcast. I'm going to quote him here. He said, I once got called a dickhead. Can you use that in a podcast? Enter Jackie Oatley. Yes, absolutely.
Right. You know why I said that though, don't you? It's because a couple of weeks earlier, and I'm still very embarrassed, that I said blue bottomed fly instead of blue arsed fly.
Yeah, this is what I'm going to bring up. I can't believe that. I don't know if people picked it up on it at the time. I can't remember what you were talking about, but you were about to say blue arsed fly, and then you stopped. You hesitated, and you said blue bottomed fly. It's just the most ridiculous CBeebies thing I've ever heard in my life.
But it's a BBC filter that I've had in my brain since I started working for them in 2002 or 2003. And yeah, it's hard to lose. It's hard to flick a switch in your brain and go, it's okay to say arse. It's okay to say arse. So I just changed it. So yes, that's why I was delighted that Richard swore on my behalf.
Well, he's broken through the glass ceiling now, so all bets are off. All bets are off. But I know that you will endeavour to try and keep it clean.
I'm tempted to use all the rude words I can think of now, but I really shouldn't. So let's move on. And Wolves players have been everywhere, all over the shop. I've counted loads of them, but I'm sure you're desperate to tell us who's done what and where. Do you want to just take it away? Have you got a nice list that you want to share with us?
Yeah, and it's not, as mentioned last week, it's not as long a list as usual. I mean, normally, you know, Jimenez is off playing with Mexico and Traore's been off with Spain. Johnny's with Spain, maybe. Nelson Semedo with Portugal. But the aforementioned group there, none of them went away with their countries, albeit Jimenez did go to train with Mexico, and it went very well, apparently, over in sunny Wales.
Less so the match without him, but yeah.
Yes, absolutely. So, there's a few bits and bobs. Portugal drew 2-2 with Serbia the other night. And for what must be the first time in years, no Wolves player took to the field in that game, which is very interesting. Some chap called Diogo Jota scored 2 goals, but we don't like to talk about that. But yeah, Neves, Moutinho and Neto all on the bench, having started a few days earlier against Azerbaijan. And of course, as people know, most countries are playing 3 games in this break, which is just ludicrous. And, you know, there'll be rest and rotation. And I'm sure they've been in close dialogue with clubs that have a lot of Portuguese players, and obviously Wolves will be at the very top of that list, even above the likes of Benfica and Porto. Obviously, there's more games to come this week. We're recording this on Monday. Vitinha did very well in a midfield three for Portugal under-21s against England. Lots of people raving about his performance, including ex-Wolves women skipper Claire Hakeman, who tweeted us to say, very promising displays from Vitinha for Portugal under-21s. He'll be full of confidence and match fitness. Maybe a good time to give him an outing, even from the bench. Yes, a funny one with Vitinha. I don't really see where he fits in, to be honest, in a rigid 3-4-3. And I think that's holding him back at the moment, in the same way it's held Morgan Gibbs-White back as well, since he's been recalled from loan. Doesn't really fit.
So what was the thinking of signing him then?
Good question. Excellent question. Who knows?
That's not really one for you, is it? Hang on. Let me just ring Nuno. Hang on, Bab.
He became available, didn't he, at the time. Porto were selling off a few players in the summer. And I know he wasn't sold, but he's brought on loan with an option. And a technically gifted attacking midfielder, sort of to replace Bruno Jordão in the squad, I think, you know, as a bench player who can come on, maybe improve as the season goes on and make a bit of an impact. But he hasn't really done that. A couple of decent appearances when Wolves were playing 4-2-3-1. I thought at Man United away, he was pretty good. People might remember just after Christmas, playing in the hole, he did all right. But yeah, I don't really see where it fits into this formation. So it'd be nice to see a bit of experimentation, as we've discussed in the last few weeks of the season. So hopefully he can get a few more minutes.
Dendonka started for Belgium the other night, which is an interesting one, isn't it? Such a talented squad they have there.
An amazing squad, and still ranked, or recently ranked anyway, number one in the world. And yeah, he starts every week, to the befuddlement of a few Wolves fans, certainly on Twitter. I guess he's, you know, with all the flair they've got ahead of him in the team and the creative attacking talent, they want a bit of a water carrier there to do the physical work, do the hard yards, and he will do that. He'll run all day long. So I guess that's why he's so popular with Roberto Martinez and with Nuno as well. So he's not having the best of seasons, Dendonka. He made a good start to the year, but he has tailed off a little bit. But good to see him getting minutes for Belgium. And a couple of others getting minutes. Romain Saïss played at centre-half for Morocco's 0-0 draw at Mauritania the other night, which we were all watching. Jackie, how do you think he played?
Oh, he's Bob on. He's got a brilliant left foot. He's a real threat from a set piece. Surprised he didn't score.
You don't say that on Sky Sports News, Bob on.
Yes. No, we didn't see Saïss the other night. But yes, he plays a lot more at centre-half these days, doesn't he? But always has done for his country anyway. Yes.
He did play at centre-half, as did Willy Bolly, who's a regular now for Ivory Coast. They've got a couple of games during the international break. He played the other night. One man who didn't was Aaron Ottosawi, who is in the, you know, in the fringes in and out of the USA squad. They played at Northern Ireland and he didn't get a minute.
What's going on with him?
In terms of...
He's not in favour with Nuno at the moment.
Yeah, not getting on too well, and frozen out of the last few squads. No injury that I've heard of, but called up by his country. So... Again, strange one. Again, someone I'd like to see more of as the rest of the season goes on. But, I mean, the last time we saw him was at Man City away, when he came on and gave the ball away and immediately cost a goal with his first touch, which I guess shows you where Nuno's at with him in terms of his sort of trust in him. And I know the season feels like it's effectively over, but Wolves still need results to stave off any fears of getting to the bottom three. So Nuno wants players he can trust. That's why he's not playing. Why he's on the bench is another question entirely. He's obviously fit in the USA squad, but not in Nuno's good books at the moment.
Is it his kind of character, Ottosawi? Because when the club did a really good interview with him, didn't they? When it was clear that he's the most laid-back bloke you'll ever see in your life. And you just wonder whether that might be at odds with what Nuno requires from his side. I don't know whether it's a personality issue. Or...
Certainly a character. And as he alluded to himself in that interview, he's been a bit mischievous, was the way that he termed it. And that's something that I've heard a few times. And, you know, he comes from a different background. He hasn't come through an academy. You know, he was spotted playing in cages in London when he was sort of 13, 14. So they certainly liked that in the academy setup, that he had a spiky personality and would answer back and challenge what was being told of him. I think if that's done in the right way, that's a good thing. But if you cross that line, then that's when certain coaches and managers will just sort of say, right, until you sort your attitude out, you're not part of this group. So... no kind of specifics here, but yeah, certainly got a spiky personality, which Nuno, I don't think Nuno would like being challenged, you know, from what I know of him. And I think that's reflected in the squad that he's put together, really. You haven't got massive egos in there and people who are going to bite back. And someone like Cotroni was maybe, and Jordan Graham, who we've had on the podcast before, has like openly said he challenged Nuno. So I think you see what happens when that happens. Now, Otisau is sort of young enough to... might be signs of immaturity there with him. So they obviously see something they really like in him as a player. But in terms of off the field, maybe that's a bit of an issue for him at the moment. But certainly extremely talented with the world at his feet. So he's at the right club to be nurtured in that respect, I believe.
Talking of which, Theo Corbiano, Wolves forward in goal-scoring shocker. This is extraordinary scenes.
Yeah, incredible. And what a goal. Six-yard tap-in it was for Canada. Amazing. For him to... get his first call up and get on the score sheet. Fantastic. It's the Olympics later this year. I know that's a big target for him personally to get into their squad. And yeah, a goal on his debut against Bermuda. Again, don't know much about their team, Jackie, but he can't do any more than get on and score a goal.
No, watching those highlights, they weren't the best, were they? They weren't the best, but that's not the point. The point is that this lad came on and he got himself in the right position, good run, good finish. And his interview afterwards, which was on some sort of Canada soccer Twitter feed, I was thinking, he's never 18. He looks about 45. I mean, he looks so much more mature than his age. And yeah, I mean, do you think he's anywhere near the first team? He's been on the bench, a couple of times, hasn't he? Do you think he's in Nuno's thoughts as coming on, or is it just really just a case of Willian Jose, Fabio Silva, or that's it?
I don't think he's anywhere near it at this moment in time, because they've Pedence's out injured and there's no kind of natural sort of wide forwards to back up Neto and Traore in that first team squad. But yet still, Corbiano can't get on the bench, which, you know, suggests to me that he's not anywhere near it at the moment, which is a shame because he's done very well for the under-23s and he's very confident, as anyone who saw Wolves' FA Youth Cup game at Chelsea last season will know, when Wolves were taking on, you know, probably the best youth team in the country, and they've set the standard for everybody, really. Chelsea, an unbelievable team. What a test it was for Wolves to take on Chelsea in, was it a quarter final? It was either the quarter final or last 16, and it was 0-0, and Wolves are holding their own, and then they won a penalty, and up steps Corbiano at 0-0 in the first half against Chelsea, and dinks a Panenka straight into the keeper's hands, and full-time score, Chelsea 7, Wolves 0.
A bit like the San Marino game, you know, when England needed to score bucket loads and Stuart Pearce's back pass and they scored.
But you speak to coaches around that setup, and they thought that they really would have given him a good game that night, but it was just the way that Corbiano missed his Panenka and then Chelsea went up the other end and scored and heads just dropped, and it was, you know, such a big lesson learned. But from what I'm told of him, his confidence is sky high and he would do it again. He's not the kind of, you know, he is...
Oh, good. Excellent. Whack him in then. But put him on pens, Nuno. Come on.
I interviewed him late last year at Checker Trade game at Port Vale, and yeah, he's extremely confident. And no, he does not look or sound like his age, and he's taken a big risk, you know, coming over to England to make a name for himself and build a career. So the thing with him now, as with all Wolves' youngsters, is playing football. Pretty simple, really. So if it's a real shame they didn't get him out on loan in January. I know they were looking to do it, but at the time Wolves' injury list was a bit longer and they were thinking we might need him on the bench. He had been on the bench a couple of times, including at Liverpool and at Brighton, I think was another one. So they didn't quite get a move for him, which is a shame. But yeah, another talent from the under-23s. We're seeing quite a few these days from various parts of the world. So that's promising.
He plays a bit wider for them, doesn't he? Rather than spearheading the team.
So yeah. He mostly plays on the right, left-footed, mm-hmm. Great left foot, cuts in, but can also play on the left. Good shot, decent height, good in the air, very good technically. So he's got a lot on his locker.
And he's older than Fabio Silva.
Aren't we all, Bab? Aren't we all?
Some of us are older than Fabio Silva's dad, by the way. But anyway, moving on.
Some of us are more than two times older than Fabio Silva. I'm just saying some. God, I'm not saying
scary.
Any names.
It's scary. And there's some bloke that captained England. Anyway, moving on.
Yeah.
We can't move on. I mean, goodness gracious me. We cannot get blasé about the fact that a player who plays for Wolverhampton Wanderers has captained England on more than one occasion. Okay, so Harry Kane wasn't playing and neither was Jordan Henderson. But the fact that Gareth Southgate gives this bloke the armband and not one of the other senior players in the side speaks volumes.
Speaks volumes and bows very well for the Euros. I mean, you know, he might not be first choice, particularly if they play a back four. You'd imagine Maguire and Stones obviously are going to be ahead of him in that regard. But when it comes to the squad for the Euros, it's looking very good. It is purely because, he's playing in a qualifier. I know it's only against San Marino, but he's starting. And B, he's got the armband now on two occasions, you know, during matches. So it shows you how highly Southgate thinks of him. I've written so many pieces on Cody since joining The Athletic, and one was about the run of consecutive matches he was playing on before he finally got rested for a League Cup game. But he played like 18 matches in a row in all competitions. So I did a piece on that and spoke to Liverpool's old academy boss, Frank McParland, who Cody counts as one of the key influences in his career, as he told this podcast when we interviewed him, you know, a year ago. And McParland said at the time, when I interviewed him, September 2019, "I genuinely think," Frank said, "he can go on to captain England. He just absolutely loves playing football. He'd have been so gutted if he never made it as a player, etc, etc, etc." And I remember thinking at the time, September 2019, I don't know, Frank, like, that's asking a lot for him to go on and captain his country. And yeah, fast forward a year and a half and he's done it twice. I mean, it's a remarkable rise, as is the whole of his kind of last 4 or 5 years at Wolves. And yeah, he's fully in there on merit. I know there's been he's been questioned a little bit by Rio Ferdinand, as we're going to go on to during the international break, but his performances for England have been almost flawless. I think it's 4 caps now, obviously got the one goal, 3 clean sheets during those games. I know you can look at the standard of opposition, but he can do no more. He's doing really well for England. We know the importance Southgate places on those performances, hence why Jordan Pickford has been his number one keeper, hence why Alexander-Arnold was dropped, because he had poor performances in his last England games. You know, Southgate places a big emphasis on how you perform for your country and what you do in training, so that bodes very well for Connor.
And also how you are in the squad and your influence on the squad, and it's very, very clear. I mean, we've known what he's like for years, but he is such a Gareth Southgate player. As I tried to tell Gareth just before the last World Cup when we had an ITV drinks, I was saying, you know, this guy, Connor Cody, you know, he's playing in the Championship. He won't be for much longer and you really need him in your England squad. And he said, oh yeah, I know all about him, but you know, it's just a case of he had to do it at the top level. And look at what he's doing. And he did play in a back four the other night. I know it's against the lowest ranked side in the entire universe and was never challenged. But that leadership and Declan Rice, we spoke on the pod a few months ago about how Rice had mentioned in a TV interview about Connor's influence in the dressing room and how he was blown away by it and how he really, really learned from it. Well, he's mentioned it again in this week's BBC Football Focus, if you want to have a watch back at that. And Declan Rice was asked what being an international player was doing for his game at the moment.
It's massive. You know, I'm only 22. I come here and I'm playing with people that have played in the Champions League final, won trophies, won Premier League titles. You know, you kind of just take a step back and just kind of pick up little bits from different people. Connor, I've never actually been in a dressing room with him. So to see him and see how the impact he has on the squad and the team inside, it's people like him that you need in your changing room and stuff like that. I've kind of taken away and tried to take to West Ham to add that to my game.
Says a lot, Tim, hey?
It does say a lot and chimes with everything that we know about Cody. And on the sort of flip side, I saw Rio Ferdinand say, and I've seen you see a lot of this on social media, why is someone like Cody in the squad or Eric Dier in the squad when Keane at Everton or Concert Villa or others aren't? I was a bit disappointed with those comments from Rio Ferdinand, really, because he knows better than anyone. It's not just about picking the 23 best players. It's not as simple as that. You've got to build a team and you've got to build a squad. The guys don't have to like each other, but there's got to be respect there and communication and a real team ethic. That's what wins you tournaments. You know, Rio knows that, and Cody is an excellent player, by the way. I'm not just saying that he's in it for his other abilities. He's an excellent player, and he brings leadership and organisation on top of that, better than I've ever seen anyone do at Wolves, I think, or certainly for a long time. So you flip that round and you look at the Grealish debate. Why wasn't he picked for ages? You know, he's sort of become a regular in the squad quite quickly now. But remember, Grealish wasn't picked for ages. Well, Grealish wasn't picked because he's been in the news a lot for the wrong reasons over the past few years. That was why, I'm sure of that. You know,
and there were a couple of injuries as well at unfortunate times for him that did coincide.
Yeah, but I really think that was a key part of it from Southgate's point of view. So in the same way, sort of, you know, bad influences or people you're not sure about their character can have a negative impact on a squad. Good influences can have a very positive impact on a squad and influence on those around them. And Cody epitomises that, really. So you hear Declan Rice say that, you hear Wolves players say it all the time, you know, what an influence Cody has on them. Add to that his massive improvement as a centre-half, and that's why he's in the squad. And I think it's a fantastic story, you know, to go from being a midfielder at Wolves that most people probably wouldn't have been bothered if he'd been sold that summer, you know, when Nuno came in. But Nuno changed his position not even 4 years ago, and his rise since then has been unbelievable, and he's just such a credit to Wolverhampton Wanderers, and everyone should be so proud of him, which they are.
Yeah, and you can't underestimate how important it is to have those type of characters at a tournament where players are with each other day in, day out,
absolutely,
week in, week out, for weeks on end. It's not just a case of, you know, sometimes it's fun to go on a website and click, oh, these have been my three goalkeepers, or these are the best centre-halves, or these are the best midfielders. And you're doing it, taking all the emotion out of it, taking all the personality out of it. You're doing, well, he's got a good left foot, and yeah, those are the two best strikers, or whatever. It's so different when you're actually a manager and you have to pick a group of players to get on with each other and to get the best out of each other. Because for England to win a major trophy, finally, again, after all these years, they have to be greater than the sum of their parts. You think back to Rio Ferdinand's era, and they were brimming with top quality players. They've since admitted that they didn't get on because they had the Chelsea versus Manchester United, or Man United versus Arsenal, and they had all these cliques and sat on different tables. And hello, England didn't win anything, and they didn't really get very close either.
Yeah, definitely. And you look at the Man United team under Fergie, the amount of leaders they had from back to front, the amount of those that had gone on to be managers is frightening, really. And then you look at Arsenal, the direct correlation between the leaders that they had, Adams, Keown, Vieira, Ian Wright, all those characters and big personalities that won them the title. And then years after that, they had none of that. And that's why they stopped winning, in my opinion. Like I said, Rio knows that. I'm sort of disappointed in his comments, really. He knows how important characters like Cody are to the team. And like I said, for him to be captain twice in his first four caps is phenomenal. It really, really is. And he's a Wolves player. We're sort of taking it for granted now. Wolves have got like 12, 13 internationals in their squad. And it's ridiculous. I remember when they used to have none, you know, but back in the day, when I first started becoming a fan, David Kelly was it at Ireland. David Kelly was it. And I remember being an Ireland fan at the 1994 World Cup, because he was pretty much the only international that Wolves had. And there'll be even fewer when you started in the late 70s.
late 70s? Well, do you know, honestly, when you talk about that, it's so true that back in the day when I first started going to Wolves in September 1990 and Robbie Dennison scored the first Wolves goal that I saw against Bristol Rovers, and he was really the only international, and he would poodle off, and I'd be glued to CFAX or Teletext to see whether he'd scored a goal, and I'd be, you know, glued to it for that 2 hours or so that he was involved. You know, is Robbie Dennison, a Wolves player, going to score on the international stage? And that was a really big deal. And back in those days, we had England B internationals. Remember Mickey Stowell was called up for England B? Andy Much played there. No, you're shaking your head.
Being
rocked by your mother in your pram, in your cot. Go to sleep, little Timothy. David Kelly, as you mentioned. There's Paul Jones, who's a Wales international. Then we started getting very exotic players such as Steve Carica from Australia,
yeah,
Cole Robinson. Start going into the mid-1990s.
Exotic Cole Robinson. Yeah, you're right.
Exotic Cole Robinson. Glenn Crowe went off for the Republic of Ireland under 21s. That was exciting. You'd be trying to scrabble around the Argus or the... or the Express and Star to find out how he'd got on in the small print somewhere. It was quite sad. It was very sad. I didn't do any work. I just followed various media outlets to find out how Wolves players had gone on. Mark Williams from South Africa with the worst first touch in a Wolves shirt by a million miles. And then you got into the really fun era, fun but unfortunate under Graham Taylor, of these top players who were so destined to take Wolves into the Premier League at long last. And then half the blighters went and got awful injuries and totally beyond Graham Taylor's control. But John de Wolf from the Netherlands, And of course, you had Steve Froggatt, who was actually called up to England when he was with Cov. His wife rudely gave birth at that time and he had to race back from Scotland and was going to make his debut. Kevin Keegan had promised him, so he didn't. But then, you had all those players, Tony Daly, etc. But unfortunately, the injuries and then went on to the likes of Ady Williams, Ewan Roberts.
Well,
and then it became quite normal after that to have internationals.
Sort of. I remember, you know, Matt Jarvis being called up for England was a massive deal. And in fact, it's quite embarrassing because we have him on the podcast now on a Nomad. But at the time, it's very embarrassing. I don't know why I'm saying it. But when he got called up, I changed my Facebook profile picture to a picture of Matt Jarvis. I was so proud.
But that's not sad. That's something to be really proud of.
Yeah, but I was like 27.
Apart from Bully, who we've not really mentioned.
I
went to England training for the BBC and I was watching him training and I was just pinching myself that there was a Wolves player running around with all these top Premier League players and about to make his debut.
Well, it was unbelievable because it had been 21 years since Bully got called up. And yeah, it was against Ghana, wasn't it? And he fully deserved it. I remember that spell he went on for 1 or 2 months and he was beating some of the best fullbacks in the country for fun week after week. And yeah, that's fantastic. And then Robbie Keane at the 2002 World Cup was a massive one for me as well. I know he'd left Wolves by that point. But yeah, there were some quirky ones over the years. Ryan Green being called up for Wales.
Gosh,
do you remember that one?
Yes.
Before he'd even played for Wolves, I think. He was Wales' youngest ever international.
Wow.
Whereas, you know, back in the day, coming to Wolves as an international player, you know, you'd mostly retired and Molineux was a dumping ground and a last chance saloon for a bit of a payday. Whereas now, Wolves kind of make international players. The amount that have made their debuts in the past four years is unbelievable. I think it's coming up to about 9 or 10 now. Neto and Osasawi being the most recent ones. And Willy Bolly, of course, Ivory Coast. So it's completely flipped on its head now. Wolves are generating international players themselves with this team of theirs, which is on its day still pretty good.
Wow, how this fine club has changed. Imagine if Cody scores at the Euros.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
I think this might be the first Euros that I won't actually be involved for a while, so I'll actually be able to watch it with friends and pints and chuck them over each other and everything. That'd be great. Is that what people do, apparently, when I've been everywhere and seen all these YouTube and Twitter clips? Talking about Twitter, Tim, interesting to see quite a lot of Wolves fans on social media sharing reports of players being linked with a potential move to the Golden Palace in the summer. We didn't talk about Neto to Man United last week because, well, you just explained him from your perspective.
I don't really see the value in giving these links much credence, to be honest. I mean, a lot of them, 95%. I think that's what Jeff Shee quoted. I think the last time he did an interview, he said sort of 9 out of 10 or 95% of transfer rumours just have absolutely no foundation whatsoever. And I'd probably agree with that in my experience. It's just an absolute waste ground of lies and often malicious lies. You know, these aren't just sort of made up for a laugh. A lot of the time they're made up by agents or even the players themselves, really, to kind of get their name out there. Neto to Man United, I mean, it's... I remember Jimenez to Man United being a massive one last year, which just made no sense for either club at the time. But they get shared for clicks and for likes, and people kind of like it, I think. You know, I think fans kind of like it. It does my head in, but I think a lot of fans just kind of like the soap opera and like being linked and like reading about Wolves being in for Cristiano Ronaldo. Whether it's true or not, it's some form of entertainment. But in terms of the reality, it's always very, very different to what you see on social media and on various websites.
And just explain where genuine rumours, that's a sort of contradiction in terms, isn't it? But where genuine reports stem from, it tends to be from journalists such as yourself or from John Percy of The Telegraph or people with very good contacts who know a lot of agents who are being tipped off by agents. They have good relationships that they know that somebody's interested in somebody. And sometimes, of course, it has to be said that sometimes the links are genuine and the moves just don't come off for a variety of reasons. There could be so many different reasons. Maybe the player doesn't want to go, the club don't want to sell, the fee's not agreed. There are lots and lots of hoops and hurdles to go through. But with Wolves being the way they are at the moment and so heavily involved with Jorge Mendes, Jorge Mendes isn't sort of tipping off some of the journalists that this and that's going to happen and that Ronaldo's moving to Wolves. So there isn't that sort of fertile ground of information that there are at so many other clubs, say, for example, West Ham, where their owners have, you know, a hotline to a lot of journalists where a lot of links are genuine and do come off because they have that relationship.
Yeah, I mean, a classic one is a player out of favour or coming down to the end of his contract and, you know, he's not got many offers and his immediate future doesn't look great. So him or more likely, you know, an agent will kind of leak that information to the media that, you know, so-and-so, Jackie Oatley being chased by three clubs, normally by agents, but also sometimes by clubs, but never by the buying club. You know, if Wolves are in for a player and nobody kind of knows about it, they don't want that information to get out there at all. You know, the exact opposite, because it might scupper their chances or alert other clubs to the player's availability. I think the only time the kind of buying club would want something out there is if the move has maybe stalled a little bit or the buying club have set their price too high and then a club might say, look, we're going to move on now, we're going to move on to other targets, just to kind of hurry that the selling club up a little bit. But like I said, most of the time, a lot of them are either just baseless or, yeah, in some cases malicious as well, but sometimes they just come from nothing. I remember the Saints to Liverpool one in January. I think it originated from someone writing a piece saying that Liverpool should be looking at Saiss because obviously they were desperate for a centre-half at the time. Saiss's contract coming to an end. And someone wrote a piece, you know, fair enough, really. Saiss is a decent player. You know, maybe Liverpool should be looking at him. And then you see that picked up and you can see the trail and you can follow it, that people pick it up as a rumour. And then all of a sudden it snowballs very, very quickly, particularly in that case, because it was in the last week of the January window, to the extent where less than 24 hours later, I'm getting texts from Liverpool fans, mates of mine, saying, are we in for Saiss? Are we in for Saiss? There's absolutely nothing in it whatsoever. It originated from someone's opinion. So that's how these things kind of snowball. But yeah, all I can say is, you know, don't read much into it when you see these kind of links. There are an absolute plethora of players over the past few years in particular, since Fosun have come in, that Wolves have been linked with, that there's been absolutely no truth whatsoever to those links.
But the reason we're talking about it now is because A, there are no Wolves games on at the moment for 3 weeks, so Wolves fans are a little bit bored. B, we can't get out and about and go and chat about these things in the pub and say, who do you think Wolves should sign in the summer? So we're all on social media a lot more and seeing more of this, so it's more of an issue. And C, Wolves have had a bit of a rough time of it this season. The goals haven't been forthcoming. Fans are a little bit frustrated and wanting to know what's next and who's next. So all of this comes together as being a bit of a maelstrom of Twitter transfer speculation. And some people can take it with a pinch of salt and have a bit of fun with it. And other people then get a bit irate about nothing happening. And then, of course, we have to add into the mix the fact that we don't hear much from the club themselves. We don't hear much from above. We don't hear from Jeff Shee very often. We don't hear from anybody at the club. We don't have sort of marketing managers speaking. And that might be perfectly fine. But the point is, there's nothing specific and definite for fans to go on, which is why rumours and speculation maybe are rife.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, Nuno as well will never, ever talk about transfers, ever. He makes a point of that. And, you know, I admire that approach and I'd probably do the same, really, because why would you want to talk about business before it's done? But yeah, that certainly kind of adds to the frustration, I think, in terms of information coming out. I mean, Wolves historically have been a very, very well-run club a non-leaky club. You know, not much leaks out of the club, really. Historically, that's been the case, and certainly in the last few years as well. So, and they don't really tend to sign players that are that well-known, really, in the public domain beforehand. So, that again, that's why I take these links with sort of famous players with a pinch of salt. You know, that in the recent years, the likes of Mario Balotelli, Andre Silva, Alex Telles was last summer was one, because Porto wanted to sell him, and it's just so easy to link him with Wolves. And obviously, he then ends up at Man United. Talisca was a very famous example a few years ago when people were just convinced, absolutely convinced, because people were writing about it, that it was happening. And I remember speaking to people at the club on a daily basis. They're like, we just don't understand where this is coming from. So, yeah, it's a very unpredictable world. But you know, stick with your tried and trusted for the correct info.
So Wolves has been touted as a potential destination for Juventus star Cristiano Ronaldo this summer due to his relationship with Jorge Mendes, bracket source Diario Madridista. And that's the kind of stuff that people are looking at and getting quite excited about, because it's obvious why people are excited about Ronaldo. But imagine if he did come, and we're joining in now, aren't we? Well, I am, I speak for myself. It would become the Ronaldo show, but it's unlikely. Is that fair to say? At some stage when he's 43, might he come and grace our shores?
When he's 43 and when Mourinho is 70, I wouldn't be surprised if they both end up at Molineux.
But out of interest, how much attention do you think the club pays to what the fans are saying on social media, on message boards, etc.? Because there's a little bit of unrest around, isn't there?
It's the only barometer at the moment as to how fans are feeling, rightly or wrongly. I mean, I'm always very careful, to be honest, when gauging how fans are feeling just on social media, because in my experience, I think I mentioned on the podcast before, you know, my dad and one of my best mates, both very good Wolves fans, they would never go anywhere near Twitter in terms of posting. You know, they might lurk and see what's going on, but would never post. And I can say the same for quite a few of my good friends who, you know, whose opinions I really respect highly. And people may chime with that, and people may think the same, you know, in their kind of social groups. So it's the ones who shout loudest on Twitter who get heard. And I think you see kind of the same 100, 200 number of people on Twitter kind of instantly replying to things, and a lot of them kind of spouting negativity. So I think it's dangerous to just judge fan reaction on Twitter. However, like I said, at the moment it's the only barometer because no fans are in the stadium. But as for the club, yeah, they certainly keep an eye on it, absolutely. And I think they try and pinpoint some of the more sensible fans in terms of their opinions, and try not to get too swept away, certainly by negativity, and take a kind of a no-panic approach, which is what they've generally done under Jeff Shee.
Yeah, which is pretty sensible. But really, when I talk about unrest, it's really more a case of anxiety about the summer and anticipation about the summer, because this summer is seen as being a really, really big transfer window for Wolves in terms of signing players who are ready for the first team rather than purely players who might be ready for 5, 6, 7 years' time.
Yeah, definitely. They're fully well aware that that's what the fans think. That doesn't necessarily mean they're going to go out and do it. But yeah, they know exactly what the fans are thinking.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
So finally, there will be a football match for us to watch that involves Wolverhampton Wanderers players in Wolverhampton Wanderers shirts. It is West Ham United on Monday night at Molineux. And West Ham are fifth in the table, which is where Wolves were at this stage last season when the season was curtailed. So West Ham have had a bit of a Wolves-type season from last season. And some envious eyes cast in West Ham's direction. What are your thoughts ahead of this game, Tim? They've won three and lost two and drawn one of their last games. They were 3-0 up against Arsenal and ended up drawing 3-3 in the last game, having lost away at Manchester United.
I think they're a fascinating case study for football behind closed doors. I mean, is it any coincidence that they have the second best home record in the Premier League when there are no fans there? You know, we know how much criticism, you know, that they've had in the last few years. David Moyes' appointment was certainly not universally popular, was it, when he came back to the club? Would they have really backed them this season after they lost their first two games of the season? How would the fans have reacted when their third game of the season was against little old Wolverhampton Wanderers? And of course, they spanked Wolves 4-0 that day. But you just wonder, having lost the first two games of the season, including at home to Newcastle, you know, that third game, if the fans were there, would it have been a different story? I think so, personally. So they're a really interesting case study, and I can't wait to see how they get on next season when fans are back. I'm not blaming West Ham fans for anything. It's just a fact that they've got very, very high demands and have been critical of the regime there and of the management over the last few years. But without that pressure, you can certainly say that, without that pressure, they've thrived this season. I mean, West Ham always have a good-looking team to me, certainly in the last few years. They've always got a team that on paper looks great, full of technically gifted players. It's been bringing it together as a team that's been the issue. And like I said, dealing with that kind of fan expectation and pressure. But I really like their team, and it's going to be a very difficult game. I mean, you look at the front five that they put out, sorry, front six sort of players, midfield and attack, that they put out against Arsenal last time out. Rice and Suchek in the middle. I mean, Suchek's been an absolute revelation this season. He'd fit in brilliantly into Wolves' team, scored a shed load of goals, but he's got the work ethic and that box-to-box mentality that goes with it. So you got him and Rice in midfield, then Bowen and Benrahma, who they got from Brentford in the summer, great player, and Lingard, who's been a revelation, behind Antonio, who tore Wolves, and in particular Connor Cody, to shreds back in that 4-0 defeat earlier in the season. So yeah, they're sort of playing 4-2-3-1 at the moment. Suggestions they might go to three at the back at some point when Masuaku comes back. But him and Yarmolenko are their two sort of guys who've been out injured recently, but possibly back soon. Probably not going to be around for next Monday's game. So Fornals is one who may come in, but otherwise they'll pick pretty much the same team. And yeah, they've had a great run recently. Only Man United, Man City and Liverpool have beaten them this year. There's going to be a really tough test, and they'll arrive here full of confidence, we know that.
Yeah, it is fascinating the way they've always been at home and the stress, really. I've done so many West Ham games for the BBC over the years. They've barely won one that I've been to. I've done loads of them. But at the Bowling Ground before they moved to the new stadium, which is awful from a spectator's point of view, you're so miles away from the pitch. And I actually really feel sorry for the fans, but a lot of them are on board with it. A lot of them don't like it because they're removed from their local community, from the local pie and mash shop and all that. It's just so disparate. People go to different pubs miles away, and they've got Westfield Shopping Centre, going to different pubs, and you're coming in from different angles. So I would never choose to be there. And of course, they were vehemently against the owners and the board, etc. But without fans, miraculously, they're having an absolutely incredible season. So as you say, it is fascinating. But that's kind of irrelevant on Monday night, because it'll be at Molineux and somewhere where Wolves have really struggled for goals. And we're really conscious in this pod, we don't want to go over old ground, but Wolves have really struggled for goals. I mean, what do you think Wolves will do in terms of lineup, personnel? Any tactical tweaks you anticipate?
Well, I mean, again, you know, West Ham have got what Wolves want. They've got Suchek scoring 9 in the league. They've got Jesse Lingard scoring 5 in 7, which is quite astonishing. And stopping him is going to be the key. You know, I spoke to our West Ham guru, Roshane, ahead of the podcast, and he said, look, Lingard's been phenomenal, sort of roaming in the 10 role, and yeah, scored 5 in 7. And the key to winning, really, at the moment against West Ham, is stopping Lingard. So who's going to do that? Is Neves going to sit? Is Moutinho going to sit? I think it'd probably be Ruben Neves' job to do that. And I'd be looking at bringing Dendonka in as well. I mean, saying this for a couple of weeks, I would start him alongside Neves in midfield at the moment. And then you hope Cody's on his mettle against Antonio up front, because on the counter-attack at the London Stadium earlier in the season, I mean, yeah, Antonio just dragged Cody all over the field, and they exploited, you know, the many gaps that were in Wolves' defence. It was such an alarming defeat. Probably Wolves' worst performance of the season. They had a real shocker that day. I didn't see that coming at all. And I think it made them think long and hard about the season ahead. So, yeah, in terms of Wolves' starting 11, like I said, I would bring in Dendonka. Otherwise, he's sort of restricted, really, in the changes that he can make. Even if Pedenzi's fit to be in the squad, I would doubt he'd come straight back in and start, you know, after his injury troubles. And then we'll see what happens with Rui Patricio. You know, I'm told it's sort of unknown at this stage whether he'll be available. Obviously, he didn't go away with Portugal during the international break. It will have been 3 weeks since the Liverpool game, and he suffered that awful knock once the West Ham game kicks off. So you'd hope that he'd have passed all the sort of necessary concussion tests and should be okay. But at the moment, unknown whether he'll play a part.
Yeah, and Wolves' lack of goals at home. Since that Willy Bolly goal against West Brom in the game that we never need to talk about ever again in mid-January, they've only scored one goal from open play, excluding penalty and an own goal. And that was against 10 men by João Moutinho against Arsenal in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 games. So goals hard to come by. Be interesting if they manage to score first in that game as well.
Yeah, you're right. That's the key. I mean, just to say, it feels like a long time ago now, but that Liverpool performance was pretty good. Certainly the first half, I thought they were great. Jose was brilliant, linking the line. Traore and Semedo were pretty good as well. You know, if they're not going to pick up where they left off against Liverpool, but that kind of set the standard for the kind of performance we want to see from them at home.
Absolutely, and they're not far away from scoring goals. I mean, they're not scoring goals, but they're not far away. I mean, they're fabulous forwards, fabulous wingers, great wing backs. They can score goals. It's just it hasn't quite been clicking, but it's not as if they're nowhere near it. You still feel there are loads of goals in William Jose. Oh, I do. Maybe I'm the only one that feels that way.
I think he's done really well. He's done really well in a few games, and then a few games he's just been completely anonymous. But I really like what he brings to the team. In terms of linking the play, I think she's got qualities that Jimenez has got. He's just not quite as mobile, and not quite as alert in the box. But I'm still backing him to score, I don't know, 2 or 3 between now and the end of the season. You know, that'd be decent from where we're at now.
Right, Tim, you ready for a few quick fire tweets to finish off the pod?
Okay, let's do it.
Okay. Wolvo Wolf Matt asks, does the potential relaxing of FFP mean we can progress the much needed Molyneux redevelopment?
I still don't think Wolves will want to invest hugely and put themselves into the red, you know, year on year. I think, as discussed last week when we were talking about the accounts, their current approach is to take it kind of brick by brick, really, as it were, and gradually improve the stadium rather than invest the tens and tens and tens of millions of pounds it would take to do the whole thing in one go. So I think at the moment, the squad is still very much the priority, and the stadium's going to be long term.
I wonder, and there's no way of knowing this, but I wonder if they'd have known that fans would be out of the ground for a year, whether they'd have bitten the bullet and just done it.
Yeah, I don't think they see it in that way, though, that they're going to have a reduced capacity for a few months, so now would be a good time to do it. I think they're seeing it purely from a financial point of view, that if that steeple stands, you know, as we discussed, I think, last year with John Goff on the pod, it's a huge job. It's been there since 1979. It's got one of the worst stands in the league. It needs doing, but it's such a massive project that it's going to cost them an awful lot of money. So I think that's the bottom line at the moment. And with, you can say now is the best time to do it because there's a pandemic and there's no fans in the stadium. I would counter that Fosun might say it's the worst time to do it because their income levels are through the floor in some regards. Bottom line is the finances and trying to make the club profitable, which is what Fosun are all about.
Okay, we have had a lot of tweets about Vitinha after his under-21 performances. Yeah. Nev Homer, Vitinha seems to be the sort of player we need, but can he play Nuno ball?
Yeah, that's it. I mean, he's on the face of it, he's creative, he's technically gifted, and that's what Wolves are lacking at times. But you look at Neto and Traore, both in the top six in the league for creating chances. So creating chances isn't necessarily the biggest problem. It's finishing them off has been the biggest problem, with one goal from a striker in open play since Jimenez was injured on November the 29th. That's 4 months now. One goal from a striker in open play. So, like I said, Neto and Traore are right up there for chance creation. So if you're going to get Vitinha into this team, you sort of need to work the team around him. And I would say that the fact he's done well at the under-21 levels does not mean he's going to come in and rip it up in the Premier League. And you'd say the same for like Dion Sanderson, you know, playing great against Burton and Rochdale every week doesn't mean he's going to go and do it in the Premier League. So you've got to understand what level they're playing at. And Vitinha, it's sort of a chicken and egg thing. And it's the same with Gibbs-White. you know, they probably should be doing a little bit more off the bench to earn that place in the first team, but equally they need regular game time to show what they can do. So it's a little bit, you know, which one comes first. And from what we've seen of Vitinha, he hasn't demanded inclusion in the team, albeit we haven't seen him for a while.
By the way, when you said that one goal from open play since November by a striker from Fabio Silva, it still resulted from a corner that hadn't been cleared and Willy Bolly was still up there and managed to nudge the ball to him. Just saying. Mike Hulsey, 85, says, which loan players, if any, are the club likely to take up the option to buy in the summer? So Ryan Aitnori, thoughts on that?
I think Aitnori would be the favourite at this point on the price tags that Wolves have set as an option. Obviously, you know, there might be some renegotiation there in the summer, but roughly 20 million for all three. And I think Aitnori is probably the one that showed the most potential. Jose, I can't see Jose happening. And Vitinha, we need to see more from him.
Stratford upon Wolves, see what you've done there. Has Nuno, his staff and the players who weren't on international duty been able to get home to see family, etc.?
You know, there's this allowance for elite sports people to travel overseas, but that's only for matches. You know, they can't pop home and visit their family. But yeah, the great thing about Portugal coming off the red list, as I think we mentioned last week, is that Ruben Neves has been able to meet his newborn boy after six weeks since he was born. But yeah, no, they've not been able to pop home to Portugal. There are still heavy restrictions on international travel unless it's to actually go and play a match.
Yes, gosh, can't wait for that to change for their sakes. Ben Hodgson, how much would you pay for an all-or-nothing style Wolves documentary just to know what Nuno's thinking? He'd never go for that.
Oh, that'd be good,
wouldn't
it?
We would pay, wouldn't we?
Can you imagine? The mask slips.
Yes.
I'd pay a decent amount of money for that. See what they really think of Jackie Oatley. I bet they discuss you all the time.
Because I'm completely different in real life. But Nuno, yeah, interesting, isn't it? Because we know people who've worked with him, obviously. So we have a jigsaw puzzle of an image of what he's like behind the scenes. And very intense, very hardworking, very demanding. Nothing wrong with any of those things. But it would be interesting, wouldn't it, for the fans to see maybe a different person to the TV interviews, which is a different person again to the press conference. So yeah, interesting, but clearly a very kind bloke as well, bearing in mind we know what he's done for local charity, etc. So interesting character. And we should say happy birthday to Stevie Bull, 56 this week. Another the million Wolves players had their birthdays in the last couple of months, haven't they? It's extraordinary. Every couple of days there's a happy birthday tweet from the club. But the one with Stevie Ball's best bits, shall we say, from this week. Oh, I could watch that over and over, particularly his goals against the Albion, but there's some absolute crackers in there, weren't there? That boy could score goals.
Oh, we miss him, don't we? We miss him. He had his jab as well, Bully, so well done, Bully.
Go on,
he's
Bully
being jabbed.
Absolute legend right there. Tim, I've loved your work recently. 10K to MK, which wasn't quite 10K, but that was the idea and that was a hashtag anyway. It was as many focus you could get in there, what, 8,900 in the end. I loved your piece explaining how it all came about. Three blokes in a pub or something like that, wasn't it? And the ticket office, not very grateful to them because they had to work overtime and weekends, etc., to make it all happen. But your interview with Pete Winkleman, who I didn't realise was from Penn. I knew he was a Wolves fan, but I didn't realise he was proper Boston,
Penrose,
born and bred.
Penrose, grew up on the Penrose. What a great... Yeah, he was a great guy. He's so enthusiastic. I knew he was from Wolverhampton, but yeah, I didn't know he was a massive Wolves fan, like a huge Wolves fan, which when he was a kid, which probably played some part in them letting almost 9,000 Wolves fans into the stadium that day, as well as a few more in the home end. But yeah, I love doing that piece. I just happened to notice that it was going to be 7 years to the day since 10K to MK, which people will remember so fondly. It just struck me, how often does that happen? An away team takes 9,000 fans to a normal away game in League One. I mean, I know Wolves were going for the title, but there was no other reason to get 9,000 fans there other than they could. And it just encapsulated a moment and a momentum and a real feeling around the club of positivity and warmth at that time, you know, under Kenny Jackett, putting the club back together. It was a great time. And yeah, I spoke to Liam McAlinden for that piece, who was brilliant. Again, I didn't quite realise how much of a staunch Wolves fan he was. Born in Cannock, all his family are Wolves fans. All his friends are Wolves fans. He's a Wolves fan, continues to be a Wolves fan. And he scored the winner that day right in front of that massive away end. I mean, as he kind of said, you know, it's the dream game of his career and always will be, and of his life, really. So fantastic to speak to him. He scored the winner for Morecambe as well at the weekend. Good lad. Liam did.
Yeah, that's his first goal for them and first in a year.
Yeah,
so
he's perennial substitute for them, but I think he started that one and got the winner. So absolutely fantastic. So yeah, really enjoyed doing that.
Yeah, I hadn't realised he was staunch Wolves either. I knew he was from Cannock, but there's a lot of Villa up there, a lot of glory hunters from when we were growing up. But no, really good piece. So make sure you have a read of that. Go to theathletic.co.uk/Wolves pod to sign up for less than £1 a week. That was a good one. Caught up also with your financial story, which was very grown up with lots of interesting info. That was really good. So if people want to understand what the almost £40 million losses meant in reality. And what's the other article I really liked? Oh, yes, your William Jose and Fabio Silva analysis. That's not really one for the pod. That's definitely one to sit down and read and analyse. But you've got a colleague, a statistical colleague from The Athletic, Mark Carey, to help you with the stats on that. That's definitely a really good read. And what have you got coming up this week, Tim?
Thanks, Bab. I'm not sure why you've been...
Oh, God, I've been way too nice to you today. I wasn't even mean to you.
Surprised.
Normally in the opening line, I just stick the boot in. And I haven't even done that. I need to think of something mean to say just to make you feel normal again.
Couple of bits coming up this week, but I don't really want to say it just in case they don't happen. So just keep your eyes glued to my social media and to The Athletic website and app, and it'll all be on there, all the good stuff.
And Wolves women are finally getting to play again. They are training today, which is Monday as we speak, for the first time in many months, about 4 months, I think it is, 3 months since they were last allowed to even get together. And they've got a match already on Sunday. And it is going to be live, by the way, on Wolves TV against Manchester United in the FA Cup. They've had the season curtailed, they won 9 out of 9, but they will be playing live on Sunday afternoon on Wolves TV. So follow at Wolves Women for all the information on that. Thank you, Spiders.
Cheers, Bab.
Look forward to catching up with you again next week on your regular podcast platform. Subscribe to The Athletic. Go to theathletic.co.uk/wolvespod. £3.99 a month for the first 6 months. And we'll see you soon. Bye for now.
The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.